You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. It's good to have your company once again as we get ready for another golfing week. We've got the WGC FedEx St Jude coming up and we'll take a quick look at the Barracuda Championship as well. Dave Kellner alongside Dave Tindall. I say alongside, joining us live on Skype this morning is Dave. Dave, good morning to you.
Hello Dave. Yeah, I decided to emigrate to Northern Ireland after last week. What a place.
What an atmosphere it was. And I was only watching on TV, but it seemed absolutely fantastic. There seemed to be a real buzz around the town, and the golf course looked superb as well.
Yeah, everything was just sort of better than you thought somehow. The town itself, I didn't really have much of an idea of what Royal Portrush was. I thought it was an absolute tiny place, but it's kind of like a good seaside town with lovely beach and everything, and this idea that the infrastructure was kind of always the reason why it wouldn't go there. It was no different to other places in Scotland, so I just thought it was fantastic, and the course was spectacular, much more undulating than other open courses I found, so really good for the spectator. You could stand on certain perches and see a number of holes, and of course the weather, we got all sorts of weather, which I always think makes an absolutely perfect open.
Yeah, Sunday was an unbelievable test for the players. The tee times were put forward an hour to avoid the really, really bad stuff, but it still looked around the turn. It was just, it looked to be punishing the players, and we saw that on Sunday. Let's talk about Shane Lowry, though, the champion golfer of the year, and more importantly, becoming the first man with a beard to win the Open since 1882. That was a scintillating 63 on Saturday. And that felt to me, Dave, watching at home, as if the walk down 18 on Saturday felt like a Sunday walk. It was just an incredible round of golf from Lowry, and it set him up for Sunday, and it turned into a two-horse race, and he was the dominant horse in that race.
Yes, it's a little bit of your thought on Saturday. Don't sort of over-celebrate this, because it's not done yet, but there was a feeling that kind of put it to bed, and you know, it basically killed everyone off apart from Fleetwood. And I don't know, Fleetwood is maybe not the most feared person to have on your shoulder. If that had been Koepka maybe playing alongside. But I think in the early holes on Sunday, Fleetwood had his chances to close the gap and just couldn't find those extra gears. And it just felt like, yeah, Lowry had got it won on Sunday. And I think going ahead, hashtag your odds man with a beard wins major. Surely's got to be in there.
Definitely. And I thought my overriding memory of the tournament was it all being about Ireland, basically. Got an Irishman winning in the island of Ireland. And Rory McIlroy, his story over the first 2 days, out of bounds with his tee shot on the first, made an eight there. And then his come back on Friday to try and make the cut, eventually missing by one. His approach has always been to downplay the significance of the events that matter most, but he was clearly crestfallen on Friday night having made that run, and I just wonder whether he needs a change of attitude in the future going into these events. Clearly someone's told him to downplay it, but you saw in that interview on Friday night with Tim Bart at the Skycart that he was just so down and devastated to be leaving after the first two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of his brain has sort of lost or blown that tournament for him, because I mean he's left there. He shot one of the best rounds of the week, which is ridiculous, really, given that he missed the cut. So it shows what he had in his locker in terms of, you know, physical skills to play that course. But just from the off, just to do that, it was just crazy. And even then, he gave himself a chance to get it back. But I think the kind of mental toll it took to steady the ship and get back on track and focus, I think that maybe led to his stupid little miss putt when he three-putted from no distance later on. But as you said, it was a real Irish theme. And even, I mean, the very first hole, I got there sort of tradition to follow the first group out, and it was Darren Clark hit the first tee shot, so we followed Darren Clark up the first. He made birdie. It just seemed like, yeah, this is sort of perfectly, isn't it? Ireland is just the backdrop, the centerpiece of this all. Darren Clark leads the Open early on, and then Rory's spectacular, you know, mess up, and then of course Shane Lowry winning. So just the Irish theme running through the tournament was just perfect, really. And it had the highs and the lows. It wasn't just all sugary giddiness. It was, you know, the drama and the sort of tragedy of Rory, then contrasting with Shane Lowry. So it was a magnificent script, really.
Well, what do you make to the internal out of bounds on the first, though? Because that was almost like a faux controversy. I had no problem with it whatsoever. I think any tee shot on the first that tests the players, and given they go throughout the year without being properly punished, I thought that was a neat thing for me, having out of bounds down both the left and right on the first, and it's a wide fairway to hit as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it was the American journalists who got a bit haughty about it, and as if like, well, that's not right, but you know, that's the rules. You come over to Ireland and these courses, and there are some differences, so it's not like it was sort of hidden behind a bush or something, was it? It was there. You could see those white posts, and you know, we walked along it in the practice rounds and thought, yeah, this could catch a few out. But as you say, it's not like it was an unfair narrow hole. You had plenty of room to land your tee shots, and you could take iron off the tee. So yeah, there was no excuse, really.
Well done to Matt Cooper, by the way, as well, who was on the podcast last week, and I'm glad we got Matt on. He gave us plenty of information about the course, said short game would be key, and there's no doubting that Lowry is a master around the greens, and he prevailed, and that was one of Matt Cooper's three picks as well. So well done to Matt.
Absolutely brilliant stuff from Matt, and shows the advantage of having a man on the ground, doesn't it? So maybe we should do these podcasts live from each course every week, Dave.
I think that's definitely a plan. I'll put that to the powers that be. No more majors.
Switch at halfway.
No more majors until next April now.
Yeah, that makes me a little bit sad, to be honest.
Agreed.
Sort of a bit of relief after this one's finished in some ways, because it's such a busy week, but now it seems a big gap, doesn't it?
It's only a month more than it was before, but condensing the majors, meaning that we get one each month from April onwards, means we've now got to wait, 250 days, I think, until the start of Augusta, which is a long spell without a major championship. I know we've got the playoffs coming up, but it's not the same, is it?
No, but I suppose, yeah, you've got to look to what we have got. We have got the playoffs. We've also got Wentworth. That's good. That's sort of saved. We've saved that one up.
Yeah.
And I think there's some big players going to be playing there. I've heard Rory mention Justin Rose. So, you know, that should be a nice way to bridge it all. We've got the President's Cup, Dave. Does that help you?
No, not at all, actually.
No, not really.
I could do without the President's Cup, to be fair.
Yeah, well, I'm trying my best, but yeah, it's been an interesting schedule. Some players clearly haven't liked it being so sort of shoved together. I think Justin Rose has found it difficult. So it's one to look at, you know, going ahead, who likes it and who doesn't. Obviously, Brooks Koepka liked it quite a bit, having finished, 1-1-2-4 in his four.
A disappointing fourth.
It felt
like he let himself down on Sunday, and he still finished fourth.
Just odd. I mean, it just seemed like Groundhog Day. The amount of times I sort of looked up and saw Koepka missing a putt from 12 feet. He must have had about 50 of them. Just absurd, the amount of, you know, had he held his putts, then Lowry, it could have been so, so different. But you've got to do that, and he didn't that week.
Lowry was still the standout player from tee to green, though, wasn't he? I mean, he was a much deserving champion on the week, Shane Lowry. Incredible performance, I thought. And I think the weather did help on Sunday, because he had no one charging at him, and it did develop into that match with Tommy Fleetwood. And because Fleetwood's such a nice guy and his caddy's such a nice guy, I think it helped Lowry on Sunday, the bad weather and the pairing.
Absolutely, yeah, because, you know, of all the players, who's not going to be sort of freaked by some bad Irish weather. It's sort of one of the Irishmen themselves, so that played into his hands. It would have been more interesting if it had been a kind of, you know, flat track player who only played well in the sun, had a big lead. But with Lowry, just thought, this is just going his way, isn't it? And he'll deal it with as well as anybody. I mean, I looked at his record as well at halfway. I think he'd led five tournaments at halfway and then gone on to win a couple and never finished worse than third. So once he got there, you're thinking he's having a big week, you know, regardless. It might not be a winning week, but he's part of the, you know, he's part of the whole thing for the weekend. And as it was, he just took control on Saturday and always had Tommy Fleetwood at arm's length, didn't he? So yeah, just a brilliant week and an absolutely brilliant champion. And did you see, I put a little clip of him on Twitter where he was kind of being asked something and he said, oh, I can't even remember. He sort of, but he just said it in such a sort of charming way. That yeah. Thought, yeah, a great bloke as well. So it's just perfect.
Let's get stuck into this week then, Mr. Tindall. We've got another big event. The WGC FedEx St. Jude is the feature tournament this week. 8-1 the field as well. Dustin Johnson heading the betting at 8-1 with William Hill. Brooks Koepka is 9-1. Rory McIlroy 10-1. John Rahm is 11s. Justin Thomas 14-1. Patrick Cantlay is 18s. Tommy Fleetwood 20s along with Justin Rose. Henrik Stenson and Xander Schauffele both 22s. 25-1. And bigger the rest. Not sure who the defending champion is here. Dustin Johnson won the St. Jude, the FedEx St. Jude last year. But this event has now been upgraded to a WGC with the Bridgestone Invitational at Firestone giving way. And Justin Thomas won that last year. So I think officially Justin Thomas is the defending champion. Either way, we know all about this golf course. TPC Southwind in Memphis, Tennessee is the host and has been the venue for the St. Jude Classic since 1989. So there's plenty of course data to go at this week, Dave.
Yes, I had a look at it in terms of what you need to do well. And it did seem to be that strokes gained tee to green came out massively. All going back through the winners all seemed to rank first in that category, or the vast majority of them. And also strokes gained off the tee, I looked at that, and again last 3 or 4 years that was really important. So hitting it well is really big. And and putting, the evidence for the putting is a bit mixed. I think it's been won with relatively modest putting, but obviously putting will help you plenty of times, but you can't fake it around that course. And I think yeah. You know, it's a par 70. Yeah, more par fours. You'd be looking at par four performance a little bit as well. So I think it's definitely a ball striker's test, this one.
Yeah, I agree as well. The water hazards come into play on numerous holes. They're a real feature, actually. This place does test ball striking. And everyone misses these greens as well because they are so small. And you can get flyers from the Zoysia grass fairways as well. The greens are Bermuda. I took a close look at strokes gained around the green this week. I must admit, I think that's a factor because these greens are they're just tough to hit, aren't they? It's a real test, Southwind.
Yeah, you think as well, because it's a WGC event, they might just make it a little bit tougher as well. They want to protect the score. So yeah, I think we're in for a solid week, and it's a strangely small field as well, isn't it? So that's something to consider. Just 64 players, is it? So. And then the dynamic of it being the week after a major and a major overseas. I mean, normally you get to Hilton Head after the Masters and you just sort of breathe out and you think, phew. And then it was Canada, wasn't it, as well? That used to be after the Open. Suddenly they're being asked to play another massive event and deal with a bit of jet lag. So it's all a few factors we've got to think about this week.
Yeah, that's actually shaped my thinking a little bit, because I think certain players will be incentivized coming towards the end of the season with the playoffs looming, whereas others will see it major season gone, and if they've had a decent spell in the majors, maybe not as focused on a week like this as some of the other players. And that's kind of led into my picks this week as well, Dave.
Okay, yeah. I've picked mine along stats lines.
Okay,
I have to say, but also I've had a little bit of a think about players and schedules and fatigue and whether they do well with it. For example, Brooks Koepka, I wouldn't go with him this week at all because he puts everything into majors and nothing left in the tank afterwards. So I'd be, even though he's got some course form, he would be one I would shy away from.
It's weird with Koepka because obviously it's the narrative is the majors matter and the other events don't. But as soon as the vast majority are saying in press conferences with Koepka, those small events don't matter, I think they might start mattering to him because is the,
to the contrary.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, and I just wonder where that balance is going to lie with Koepka in the future, because I think he wants to prove everyone wrong basically all the time he's out on the golf course. And at some point, there's going to be a moment with Koepka where people are saying, oh, well, he never performs in these smaller events, even though the WGCs, and he'll want to prove those doubters wrong. And I think we're getting to that balance, that point now, maybe, where that might be come to fruition, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a kind of odd, kind of awkward relationship with the press. There was a moment at Royal Port Rush in the press tent where they, if someone shot a good score near the lead, you always get like a message over the tannoy saying, "Would any hands up if you want so-and-so to come into the tent to be interviewed?" They all do sort of these flash interviews just sort of outside, but the ones near the lead are normally come in. And there was a question, "Hands up if you want Brooks Koepka to come in," and nobody put their hand up. It's like, well, we know what he's going to say. It's not work. We can't be bothered. We'll just take his sort of quick quotes.
I think I must admit he's gone up in my estimations with his words about JB Holmes and slow play. I think he's the first high profile player to be outspoken about that. And I know JB Holmes is. It's almost like everyone's forgotten about the career of JB Holmes, and now he's just known as the player that plumb bobs, which is a little bit unfair on JB Holmes. But him being paired with JB on Sunday was always going to open a can of worms, and he didn't shy away from it in his post-round press conference.
No, and I don't know, was a few people thinking of the word karma when JB shot 87?
Yeah. Which is it is a little bit unfair on JB Holmes, isn't it, that he's been singled out, because a lot of the other players are slow out there as well, but he's become almost the poster boy for slow play.
Yeah, it's sort of the combination of, because he's prominent, you know, in big tournaments, then he's more in the focus, isn't he, for that kind of thing. If he was just trundling away in 35th, no one might give a damn, but because he's at the business end in some tournaments, then it goes on him. And of course, those are the situations when you're probably likely to slow down anyway, if you're thinking, oh, there's money on the line.
I've got two picks for this event.
Yes, me too.
Okay, I'll let you go.
Yeah, I'm kind of going all in on Justin Thomas this week.
Yeah, I must admit, I've not put him up in my two selections, but he'd be the one that was last off the list for me. 14-1.
We talked about him, haven't we, in recent weeks. I think you've probably been even keener than me, but it's like his game is coming round. I like the fact he came over. He had this terrible links record and he wanted to do something about it. So he came over to play Scotland, and then he played in the Open, and he had two really good finishes, 9th and 11th. And the 11th was better than that, really. Triple bogeyed 17 on the final day when it all looked set for something, maybe top six. And I think he'll go home thinking, right, I've kind of not exactly cracked it, but I've taken a big stride towards putting that Achilles heel behind me. And now this is, you know, I'm more of this global player that I can play anywhere. I think he'll just be full of confidence.
Yeah.
The other thing, element, if you think, oh, the fatigue thing, I remember him winning the CJ Cup, was it last year or the year before, when in theory he was running on fumes. Mm. So I have no problem at all that there might be a little bit of fatigue, that, you know, we've seen him go to switch time zones and still win, so that's all catered for. But I particularly like his stats as well. He's second in strokes gained tee to green. He's got great par four stats as well in both par four categories. He's not played the course, which is the only possible thing you could pull him up on, but if you look at the history of the normal St Jude event, you've had people playing it for the first time who've just gone there and won. I think DJ did it for the first time. There's been others as well. So it's a course where I don't think you need to, you know, have to spend ages learning it or have to have a few laps of it. I think if you come there in good form, you've got a big, you know, that counts for plenty. So Thomas, from the last 2 weeks, from even before the last 2 weeks, I think he's putting his start to catch up with his fantastic long game again. I think he's the one to beat for me at 14s.
Yeah, I do like Justin Thomas this week. And we didn't have lots of coverage of Justin Thomas last week, but One thing stood out to me. I thought his imagination around the greens was almost second to none. He played some wonderful short game shots last week. That will stand him in good stead this week. And again, going back to what I said at the top, incentivized, I think, this week as well, because it's a long time since he's won now. And you talked about fatigue. It needs mentioning that he's missed a large majority of the season as well. So he's going to be fresher than most, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe it was just a sort of short-term thing. I was thinking travelling from the Open back. But I think he's got plenty in the tank. And whichever way I come from it, I keep landing on him. So he's really quite a confident pick.
Okay, 14-1 Justin Thomas. I'm going with Patrick Reed as my selection.
Yeah,
yeah, he's 40-1 Patrick Reed. And he hasn't won since the Masters last year, but he's rounding into form nicely now, and I thought 40s was definitely worth a play. He actually ranked 10th in tee to green last week, en route to that 10th place finish at the Open, and prior to that he'd finished tied for 23rd at the 3M Open, where his iron play was really on song, and tied for 5th at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, again where he hit his irons great, and that matters into these small greens this week. And as mentioned, I put a huge emphasis on short game. Reed is one of the best in the game in terms of scrambling. He ranks 9th in strokes gained around the green this season. And although his course form gives us very mixed messages, with 3 miscuts in his last 4 starts, he did finish 5th at Southwind in 2013. And I think he shows up this week. I think he's got a lot to play for at the end of the season. He'll want to win again, and 40-1 I thought was decent value on Patrick Reed.
Yeah, he was close to for me, definitely. Maybe 4th on my list.
Yeah.
So yeah, good luck with that one. I'm staying there. There's a few big outsiders I'll mention in a bit, but I'm going to stay near the front end for my second pick. I'm going to go with Webb Simpson.
Yeah, I fancy Webb as well.
Yeah, I think there'll be a few on him this week. Just come back from Royal Portrush, where he was tied 30th, but it's kind of almost the worst he could have finished. He was prominent early on. Just gradually the weather caught up with him a little bit. But 30th, that was his actually worst performance in the majors. So he's had a real good set of majors this time, top 30 in all 4. I also like the fact, again, that he's had a fairly light schedule compared to some. He's basically focused on the majors for his last few months. He's played the PGA, slipped in the Canadian Open, then US Open and British Open. So nothing in between the US and the, British, whatever you want to call it, Open Championship, just using it to differentiate there. And I think maybe as well, I mean, that's a month between the last two majors, the gap. So maybe just there was a slight element of rust at Royal Portrush, possibly, but you know, I'm happy that he's played that event. I think he's got plenty in the tank to come over back to TPC Southwind, where he was 3rd on his penultimate visit back in 2014. It's a while ago, but he's not played it for the last 3 years. But he can clearly play that course. Look at his stats; he's got the numbers that you want for someone playing that course. He's 7th in par 4 performance, 18th strokes gained tee to green. It just that lightly raced element to him. I do really like that. This just particularly for this kind of week when it's on the back of a grueling run of majors. So he's going to be my second one at 33s, Dave.
Yeah, I like that bet a lot. Webb Simpson at 33-1. My second pick, I'm going for one of the outsiders in the field here. I'm going with Keith Mitchell.
Right, yeah, he's the one I was going to mention, so I'm glad you've put him up.
Yeah, 150-1. It's just the return to Bermuda Greens, really, which should signal the return of Keith Mitchell, really. And he looks primed to go well at a big price. His recent form is pretty disastrous, if truth be told, but it was very similar going into the Honda Classic in early March, and he got his first tour win. And even though he missed the cut of the Open, it's worth noting that his second round of 69 only had one bogey. And at the 3M Open, the final round of 75 saw him plummet down the leaderboard. So maybe hiding a little bit of his form there, had 3 solid rounds prior to that final round 75. And despite this recent run of poor results, he continues to drive the ball well and is 6th in strokes gained off the tee this season. And he's had an appearance here, played well to finish 37th last year. And his approach play was particularly strong at the course last year. And as he always does on Bermuda Greens, he putted well. And if he can align the work off the tee that he's shown this season with his approach play at the course from last season, and he puts well again, I think he could have a pretty strong week, Keith Mitchell, and we're talking at 150-1 here as well. So I thought it was a decent price, Dave.
Yeah, you've covered absolutely everything I wanted to say, really. The only thing I might add is there a player more kind of extreme in terms of Bermuda liking? Because after he won the Honda, he then finished sixth at Bay Hill.
Yeah.
Then you get a run of events that he made the cut the players after a very good first two rounds. But then you get a run of events that kind of aren't Bermuda. And then suddenly he pops back up and he's eighth at Quail Hollow, which is champion Bermuda, which is the same as this week. Then you go to some non-Bermuda events and he goes to pot a little bit. But as you said, I think there's encouragement in his last two starts. I think if you just dig down and, on the face of it, 66 and missed cut, he's out of form. But I think coming over to Royal Port Rush and shooting an under par round, I think he's going to think, well, that wasn't a wasted trip by any means. And you could look at it, the fact that it's an advantage having played just two rounds. He avoided the worst weather on the Sunday.
True.
So he's got a good one on his last lap of that he's played. And you said, what, one bogey in that 69? So
yeah.
I think if he does really well this week, and we both hope he does, I think sort of the clues were there.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think 150-1, you can take a shot, can't you, to small stakes at that sort of price,
yeah,
as well.
And it's such a small field that 150 is a good price.
Yeah, absolutely. What did you make to the? We've talked about Koepka. What did you make to the others at the top of the betting? Just before we get to honourable mentions here, Dustin Johnson's obviously won twice at the course and won by six last year, 8-1. DJ played okay last week at the Open Championship, but apart from that run at the Masters, I think he'll be disappointed with his major season.
Yeah, he played okay, but I mean, he still finished 51st. I know he probably sort of gave up a little bit at the end, but last four starts, 51st, missed cut, 35th, 20th. It's not in the sort of form he has been, so I'm prepared to let him go. I think that price is all course form, really, isn't it? So not for me.
McIlroy's bounced back from major disappointment in the past and put in some really strong displays. I think he's won twice after missing a cut in a major. 10-1. Will he be able to overcome the what happened last week in terms of the enormity of it and the focus on him?
It's a massive, massive guess, isn't it, if you're backing him, because that is that. I know he's had collapses or he's played poorly in other majors. I think the big one you'd mentioned for his mental strength would be winning the US Open after blowing the Masters.
But yeah,
I still think there was an element of that was young Rory, where things haven't got into his head so much nowadays. I mean, what must it have done to him missing the cut at Royal Port Rush when it was all set up for him to do what Shane Lowry did? I think it will be astonishing if he can just shake that off in a week and just see this through to victory.
Mm.
I'm not saying he won't play well, but to win this straight after that, hats off to him if he does, but I'm not going to take the chance.
And John,
betting-wise.
John Rahm at 11-1 came into the obviously you went for him in the Open Championship, came in with huge expectations and was 5-under through 9 on Thursday, and everyone thought, here we go, John Rahm's going to win his first major. And it all slightly unravelled on the second on Friday when he made 7 from greenside, and that was his defining moment in the Open, I thought.
Well, I don't know, because that wasn't great, but he did recover really well from that. It wasn't like it signalled a slide. I think that was his only mistake of the day. He fought back valiantly. I still thought he was there at the weekend, and he played 16 other holes on that Friday and got it out of his system. It was just I just don't think he just played well enough.
Yeah.
Overall, I mean, 11th, it was still his best Open by a distance, but you can't help but think he might thinking, well, that's a year gone, four majors, didn't win one. I want to be winning these things.
Mm.
So a little bit of disappointment hanging over him, just a tad.
Yeah, perhaps. It'd be interesting to see how he goes this week. Any others you want to mention?
I looked at Brant Snedeker. He's, you know, Tennessee local, played well here before. Got some good finishes in recent weeks. I thought he was decent at 66s. I mean, the main outsider, you picked him in Keith Mitchell. So you've kind of covered that one. One other outsider I briefly looked at was Max Homer because of the champion Bermuda that he won on at Quail Hollow. I'm not saying he'll win again suddenly, but you could back him in a side market, maybe.
Yeah, he's 200-1. And I looked at Danny Willett. I think he'll go well this week. He's 66-1. His renaissance continued with a fine tie for sixth at Royal Portrush last week. And I think he'll have a good week again here. Short game is brilliant. And the course will suit him, in my opinion. So I looked at him at 66-1 as well. Danny Willett this week.
Yeah, I think we've sort of covered everything we need to there.
Let's move on to the, have a quick word on the Barracuda Championship as well, the latest betting. Colin Morikawa is the 12-1 favourite, Martin Laird 20s along with Martin Keimer. Russell Henley is 22s, Daniel Berger 22s along with Emiliano Grillo. Ryan Palmer is 25s, Cameron Tringali and Sepp Straika, both 28s along with Bill Haas, and it's 33-1 and bigger the rest. And it's a return to Reno in Nevada for the opposite event to the WGC this week. And Montreux Golf and Country Club is the host, as it has been since the inception of this event back in 1999. The difference to a standard PGA Tour event is the scoring system. Modified Stableford scoring is in play rather than the standard stroke play. You get 8 points for an albatross, 5 points for an eagle, 2 points for a birdie, 0 points for a par, minus one for a bogey, and minus three for a double bogey or worse. So it's the highest number of points on the week that wins. And scoring largely depends on the weather, but we'd expect 40-odd points to win, as it has done in all seven editions since Modified Stableford was employed for this event. And as far as the course is concerned, it's a Jack Nicklaus. It's a par 72, which measures 7,472 yards, but because of altitude, it plays much shorter than this. And as with most Nicklaus designs, we say this continually on the podcast, it really is a course that rewards decent iron play, and what a player does off the tee is largely irrelevant at Montreux Golf and Country Club. Anything else you want to add as far as the dynamic of this championship is concerned?
Not really. I mean, obviously, you would look at par breakers because you can make eagles as well, and eagles obviously count massively in terms of the points. I'm good, Dave, because I had Vaughan Taylor to win this easily. He seemed to be in the early field. Now he's vanished.
Yeah, not there, is he?
No, because he's won it twice. He's ninth last year. He's in great form this year. I mean, I know his price might have not been great, but I thought Morikawa might have taken a bit of the market with him. But yeah, he's gone, so that's kind of poo-pooed my bet. Keimer was one before I saw the prices, because obviously he was the first reserve at Royal Portrush, and he must have looked at a few of them and thought, oh, can't you just get injured slightly? Or
that's no way to speak about David Duval.
Well, maybe not Duval, because I love David Duval, so, but it was more sort of those who were maybe deliberately carrying injuries.
Yeah.
Who knows? You're not going to pull out the Open unless you really have to, are you? But no. Martin Keimer must. There was a bit of, you know, sadness that he was there and couldn't get in because he might have done well in recent weeks. I thought he will have an extra incentive to do well, but I think 20-1 in a format which is a bit kooky.
Yeah,
really.
I think he wants a slightly tougher test, doesn't he? As well,
yeah.
Martin Keimer.
I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, I looked at Keimer because you look at the. If you're just breaking it down as class acts in the field that are returning to form, Keimer's the one for you, isn't he?
Yeah, you'd go on to him, yeah.
I've not got a selection for the event, but I've got a few I want to mention. Have you got an official pick for this?
No, I haven't, no.
No, the three that I wanted to mention, Martin Laird being one of them, because he plays incredibly well over the West in Nevada. And Vegas, and his record at the course is superb. He's tied for 15th or better in five starts at Montreux Golf and Country Club, and he warmed up with a big week for sixth place in the opposite event, the Barbasol, last week, and I just think he comes into this primed. I thought at the top of the betting, 20-1, Martin Laird was the one that I wanted.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I looked at a couple. I looked at Alex Prue. I think he's had some smatterings of form here and there. You think of him as a West Coast player. 29th at the Barbasol last week when he was a bit in error than that for most of it. And 29th and 37th here as well. 100 to 1. Matt Everey's a weird player, isn't he? He can suddenly be hopeless and then shoot really low scores. I looked at him at hundreds as well, but couldn't really pull the trigger.
Yeah, another couple that I looked at, Sam Saunders, who's got a really good record in Reno, 9th, 8th and 7th in his last three starts, performed well a couple of starts ago as well, so he was on my radar. And Joey Garber as well, I had a look at, just trying to locate his price. Let me have a look what he's at the moment. Joey Garber is 100 to 1, which I think is reasonable. A 13th on his only appearance in 2016. And even though he flopped at the Barbasol, prior to that, he'd logged a tie for 23rd at the 3M Open and a tie for 10th at the John Deere. If he's in that sort of form, I thought Joey Garber could go well at 100 to 1.
Yeah, one final one. Jonathan Bird at 80s. He's got some great cross form, second and a third and a few other top 20s. Now, he is offering a mixed bag of late, but he was fourth at the Corrales Punta Cana a while ago. More recently, he was 14th in Canada with a third round 64. So if it's horses for courses and someone who can pop up on the West Coast, I think Bird's done enough of that down the year. So 80s could be an interesting one.
That very much takes a back seat, though, doesn't it, to the the main event this week, which is the WGC FedEx St Jude. Dave, just recap your selections for the week.
Yeah, so Justin Thomas for me, 3 points win, not messing about there, at 14 to 1 at St Jude. And then the other one, Webb Simpson, I will go a point each way at 33s, is it, or 35s?
33s, I think.
33s, point each way, Webb Simpson.
I'm going a point each way, Patrick Reed, at 40 to 1, and half a point each way on Keith Mitchell at 150 to 1. Justin Thomas would be the player that I wouldn't want to win given the selections for this week, but obviously I want him to win for your sake. So I'd probably go with Danny Willett as the player I wouldn't want to win, given he was fourth on my list at 66 to 1.
Yeah, wouldn't want to win for me. Tricky one, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you've not really got one, have you, this week?
Not really. I mean, it might have been Patrick Reed, but again, you've picked him, so that's sort of covered that.
Very good. Dave, will you be back in the studio with me next week? I missed sitting opposite you.
Do you know what? I won't. I'm actually away in the lakes.
Are you? Okay, we'll have to try and sort something out for next week then.
So I don't know what reception's going to be like, but I will attempt to join.
We'll try, won't we? We'll try.
Yes, although there's nothing in Europe, is there, next week? I don't think.
I've not had a look at the schedule, I must admit.
I think it's a blank week in Europe, but there'll be something in America.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Dave.
Yeah, cheers, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned into the podcast. You can follow myself and Dave on Twitter as well if you wish to do so. It's at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner. Let us know what you think of the podcast. And myself and hopefully Dave will be back next week. Thank you for tuning in. Check out all the betting at williamhill.com. And if you're having a go on the golf this week, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.